Hey, Clay, if there was a summer camp for critical thinking, we'd be the chief counselors.
Those jellyheads in June would be intellectual warriors by August.
Be a lot of fun, too. Some Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure references thrown in.
This podcast, like a daily dose of that, minus the campfires, archery, and pranking the girls.
The bona fide boot camp for critical thinking. You can get in on it for free at the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts. Just search our names, Clay and Buck, listen and subscribe.
Let's talk 2024, the state of America, the world of make-believe. What's going on at Planet Fitness? Are they about to go out of business? Josh Hammer breaks down a busy day in the courts, all that and more coming up on I'm Right. There's something great happening out there, and something that makes me nervous at the same time. So let's lead with that. We have such a huge show tonight about 2024 and the world of make-believe and all kinds of things. But let's get with something awesome. Let's start with something awesome. After all, it's Monday. You really see things coming apart for Joe Biden, don't you? It's really, really going badly for Joe Biden. And we'll get to why that's making me a little nervous here in a few, but let's just focus on this. This is a news story out NBC News. NBC News, one of the top propaganda arms of the American communist. They're out there talking about Joe Biden behind the scenes, quote, seething about his reelection chances. He's angry. He's anxious. Joe Biden is in deep trouble. And that should put a smile on your face for 2024. Joe Biden is in deep trouble. And here's the thing about the kind of trouble Joe Biden's in. There's a good chance, politically, we're not going to talk about the election just yet. I'll get to that in a minute and some things that make me nervous. But politically, there's probably nothing Joe Biden can do to pull himself out of the trouble he's in. You know, it's one thing to fall into a raging river. Let's say some whitewater rapids. Only you've got a life jacket on, and you're an excellent swimmer. So, yes, you're in trouble, and yes, you might drown, but you can see how that guy might be able to pull himself out of that some way, get to the shore. You could see that. But if you have no life jacket and you never learned how to swim and you go into the whitewater rapids, well, you're probably in very deep trouble. You see, Joe Biden doesn't have anything that can reverse the course he's on. He can't reverse his policies. Joe Biden doesn't make these policies. He's surrounded by committed communists who hate America, trying to burn everything down. So in an election year where he should secure the border, he very clearly should. Just electorally, he clearly should. He won't. He can't. He's not allowed. In an election year where he's supposed to dial back on some spending, hopefully get this inflation under control. He's controlled by communists, trying to burn America down, trying to destroy the currency. So he can't. He won't. So he can't do that to save himself. And Joe Biden is in a uniquely horrible, but unique situation where his physical and mental capacity has deteriorated to the point that he can't rely on likability or charm or, look, a lot of these politicians get very, very far on that stuff. And no, I don't like Joe Biden, but a lot of politicians get very far, no matter how much people hate their policies on the, hey, the smile, the joke, hey, seems like a good guy. Joe Biden, he just can't do it anymore.
I was very happy to see Northern Ireland's Executive Assembly reinstated last month. Now Northern Ireland is a fully functioning government again. And I didn't admit your colleague.
That's life. Look, I'm not even trying to be mean. He can't get up there and wow the ladies, charm the dudes anymore. He can't. He's not physically able. He's not mentally able. Look, let's talk about an inside baseball part of politics as we lay out kind of where we're at in 2024 and how bad of trouble he's in. We just had the State of the Union address. Now, let me explain how this normally works. I know you probably know a lot of this stuff. Let me explain how this normally works. When you're the president, doesn't matter who you are, Republican or Democrat, and you give a State of the Union address, you pretty much always, really, without exception, I think, for the most part of my lifetime, you get a bump in the polls. It's just one of those things everyone understands. Everyone who understands politics, all the political nerds like you and me, everyone gets that you will get a bump in the polls during the State of the Union address. Now, why is that? Well, you get to make a speech to the entire country. The networks stop their programming. Okay, so the whole country has to sit there. They have to listen to you. You look, as president, you look powerful. You look important. And you will normally, during the State of the Union speech, there's always political stuff in there, you'll normally kind of give this flowery, we're all in this together, America's doing so great things, so the whole country kind of sits there and watches you give this speech, and we're all in this together, and look, it's not life-changing, but you always get a bump in the polls from a State of the Union speech. It's just one of those things everyone understands. Except for now. Joe Biden gave his State of the Union speech last week. No bump in the polls. Now, why was that? Well, we'll get to that more, and we've talked about that already, so I guess we don't have to belabor the point. Why did he not get a bump in the polls? Because Joe Biden didn't get up and give that speech, the one I just described, the unifying, we're all in this together, America's doing great. Joe Biden has internal problems within his own party. Within the support arms of his own party, Joe Biden had to give an extremely partisan, nasty speech because Joe Biden is too busy trying to keep his own team together. So his speech was nasty. He got no bump in the polls. I mean, you want to talk about keeping his team together and how badly that's failing. The Washington Post might be the most evil communist publication on planet Earth, and I really genuinely mean that. If you go through Washington Post history, it is a despicable, evil rag, but they're always on Team Democrat. The Washington Post is publishing articles about how Dome needs to step aside as VP. You want to talk about not keeping the team together? Washington Post, they're always playing ball. They're always on the team. Not right now. That's how badly it's going for Joe Biden. And a lot of this is economic. People, especially independents who can vote either way, they feel inflation, doesn't matter how many lies you tell them about the economy and how great it's doing in jobs. People look around, they shop, they know it's bad. So that's part of it. But another part of it for Joe Biden, another reason he gave that speech, but it's yet another reason he can't seem to move in the polls, is he has a domestic coalition problem, as we've talked about. Remember, Democrats are communists. Modern Democrats are, not your older Democrats usually, but modern Democrats, they're all communists or communist adjacent. Even if they don't know they're communists, that's what they are. And so the modern Democrat Party, it's all a bunch of malcontented groups. That's, as you know, everyone who read the Anti-Communist Manifesto has known that the communism is simply the religion of the malcontent. That's what it is. Find the malcontents in any society, recruit them, use them for power to destroy things and whatnot. So the modern Democrat Party, when you look at their various coalitions, that's what their coalitions are. This group and that group, and you've got this and the teachers and the climate changers and the feminists, and you have all these people. But there has always been a problem coming for the American Democrat, and that is their groups don't make a lot of sense lots of the time. In fact, many times their groups look to be really at odds with each other. Here's one people don't talk about. The LGBTQ Air Force, that group of malcontents. The super freaks on the left. Okay, that's one group. Well, 90% of black voters in America vote Democrat as well, except that way of life is less popular in the black community than any other community. Those groups are at odds with each other. So that's going to be a problem eventually, right? And, well, Democrats have a Jewish/Muslim problem here in America as far as their domestic coalition goes. We've talked about this already. 2/3 of American Jews vote Democrat. They are huge fundraisers for the Democrat Party. The vast majority of American Muslims vote Democrat. Israel Hamas kicks off. Democrats don't know what to do. They back Israel, they lose their Muslim support. They back Hamas, they lose their Jewish support. They're in such dire straits. They're so worried about losing Michigan because of the Muslim population in Michigan. Chuck Schumer got up and called for Benjamin Netanyahu's head.
At this critical juncture, I believe a new election is the only way to allow for a healthy and open decision-making process about the future of Israel. at a time when so many Israelis have lost their confidence in the vision and direction of their government.
I just want to once again emphasize what a gigantic deal that is. And you don't have to have any personal investment in Schumer or Democrats or Republicans or Israel or Hamas. You just have to understand world affairs and how it works. Israel is considered an ally of the United States of America. They're not some tiny little place we colonized. They're considered an ally. They are. You don't have your politicians stand up and call for the ouster of the politicians of your ally. It's just not something you would ever see done, ever. You would never see someone in the UK get up and give a speech today and say, it's time for Joe Biden to leave, even if that's what you want, even if that's what I want. It would never, ever happen because we're allies, so you don't do that. That was a gigantic deal. And it was not like some one-off with Chuck Schumer where he had one too many bourbons and got up there and ran his mouth. Here's all the most powerful Democrats in America backing that up.
I'm not going to elaborate on the speech. He made a good speech, and I think he expressed a serious concern shared not only by him, but by many Americans.
It's curious to me to see Netanyahu talk the way he does when he tried to interfere in American elections. But that's another subject. When he came to the Congress, criticized the president of the United States, barged into our country, into our in our elections. But again, let's put that aside and let's just say as we go forward, what is wrong with advocating for elections in a democracy?
He didn't just say it. All the big cheese Democrats backed him up. And remember, when you understand these people are communists who don't really care about foreign policy, they don't care anything about Hamas or Israel. This is all about domestic. That tells you how truly concerned these people are about holding together their domestic coalition. Put a smile on your face. We'll get to the potential bad news here in a moment, but put a smile on your face. All I see right now is desperation. These people are desperate. They're attacking each other, biting at each other. These people are desperate, and that is a good thing, all right? So smile about something. Now let's get to the potential bad news. I'm saying bad news. Let's get to the potential bad news. You know that the system itself is evil. Our institutions have been taken over by evil people. You realize that now. You understand even your CDC is run by evil people, the FBI, the media, the government, the education system, Hollywood. You understand all these people work together now. We call it the system. And the system worked very, very, very hard to get rid of Donald Trump. And they succeeded, obviously. They worked very, very hard, and they got rid of him. The system is now... It is what? It's March. We're not that far away from the election. And the system is staring yet another potential Trump presidency in the face if they can't turn these poll numbers around. What are they going to do? Well, what would the most evil people on the planet do to keep power? I don't have an answer to that question specifically, but I think you and I both understand it's not good. I am worried about what a desperate system might do in order to avoid losing any power. I'm very, very worried about it. And I'm also worried about some other things. We're all making fun of stuttering jokes, he can't talk, and the poll numbers look bad. Democrats are raising boatloads of money. Another record-breaking February, $53 million. And don't fool yourself. Money matters a lot in politics, reaching the undecided independent voter who never has any idea which way the wind's blowing. Money matters a lot. Democrats are still really good at that. And Democrats have this in their back pocket as well. Democrats have an American media that is not biased. It doesn't lean left. Stop with these lame, completely benign descriptions of the American media. The American media is evil. It is a clear and present danger to the United States of America. They are so communist, there is nothing they won't do in order to destroy Republicans and protect Democrats. And this is why I'm going to play something for you. It's old, but it's going to be in reference to something new that just happened. Your liberal Aunt Peggy, the Democrat in your life, whether it is your Aunt Peggy or a Democrat you work with or your neighbor or an acquaintance, They seem oftentimes as if they occupy a world of make-believe, don't they? When you're talking to them, if it's about world events or even if politics come up, you have these moments, don't you, where you sit back and you think to yourself, huh? What? Well, allow me to explain something once again. The American Democrat, who watches MSNBC all day and, of course, went to Harvard and watches the Hollywood Awards shows and went to school in a public education school in America, that American Democrat, the, quote, normal American Democrat, is insane. And I don't mean that in an insulting way, actually, even though everyone will take that insultingly. The average American Democrat is as insane as the guy who gets naked and covers himself in peanut butter and jumps off a building because he thinks he's Thor, the thunder god. That guy, the peanut butter man, lives in a world of make-believe that is not real. So does the American Democrat, because that's the world the system has created for them. They watch the news, they go to school, and so they know, in the words of Ronald Reagan, even though I'm paraphrasing, they know so many things that are simply not true. Do you remember Trump and the whole Charlottesville thing and what he said?
I do think there's blame. Yes, I think there's blame on both sides. You look at both sides. I think there's blame on both sides, and I have no doubt about it, and you don't have any doubt about it either. And you had some very bad people in that group, but you also had people that were very fine people on both sides.
It's what he said. It's on camera. It's not a mystery. It's on camera. But your liberal Aunt Peggy, she believes that Donald Trump called Nazis very fine people, because your liberal Aunt Peggy watches the news when Joe Biden gets up and speaks and talks about why he ran for president. Joe Biden will actually cite the lie that's a verifiable lie. We have videotape of it.
When did you get to 100%? When did you know this is something that I have to do for yourself?
Charlottesville. When those folks came out of the fields carrying torches with contorted faces and carrying Nazi flags. When the president was asked about it, they asked what he thought, he said, I thought there were very fine people on both sides. No president, sitting president, has ever said anything like that.
And your liberal Aunt Peggy, to this day, believes that that's what he said. What happened again? Over the weekend, Trump was giving some rally. He was talking about auto tariffs and well, here's what he said. It's on video.
China now is building a couple of massive plants where they're going to build the cars in Mexico and they think that they're going to sell those cars into the United States with no tax at the border. Let me tell you something to China. If you're listening, President Xi, and you and I are friends, but he understands the way I deal, those big monster car manufacturing plants that you're building in Mexico right now, and you think you're going to get that, you're going to not hire Americans, and you're going to sell the cars to us. Now, we're going to put a 100% tariff on every single car that comes across the line, and you're not going to be able to sell those cars. If I get elected, now, if I don't get elected, it's going to be a bloodbath for the whole. That's going to be the least of it. It's going to be a bloodbath for the country. That'll be the least of it.
Okay. So agree or disagree with what he said about tariffs. Very obvious what he said there. Pretty innocuous. Everyone knows what he's talking about. But why did your liberal Aunt Peggy text you today? Why did that Democrat you work with meet you at the water cooler today and talk about Donald Trump threatening a bloodbath? Because that person is an insane person. If you watch the news, if you go to American schools, if you listen to Hollywood, if you listen to Democrats, if you watch these people on television, you're certifiably insane.
We just have to win this election, because he's even predicting a bloodbath. What does that mean? He's going to exact a bloodbath? There's something wrong here.
What I heard was a continuation of the same rhetoric, the same endorsement of political violence that we've seen from Donald Trump for years.
So no, we did not miss the full context. This was not some meandering off-message comment. This is his message. As the Biden campaign put it, this is who Donald Trump is, a loser who gets beat by over 7 million votes and then, instead of appealing to a wider mainstream audience, doubles down on his threats of political violence.
That's why your liberal Aunt Peggy seems insane. She is insane. What's that going to mean for 2024? I don't know. We'll see. All that may have made you uncomfortable, but I am right. Lawfare makes me uncomfortable. We're going to discuss some lawfare with Josh Hammer next. Before we get to that, let's talk about Lone Star Transfer. Let's talk about the timeshare you think you're stuck in. You are not, but you think you are. Listen, timeshares can be so much fun for a while, and I hope you enjoy yours. But eventually, you're done, and this is where most of these timeshare companies lie. They don't tell you when you're signing the paperwork that you're never allowed out, that you have to pay the annual fees forever. Use it, don't use it, you're always paying. That you can't just call and say, I want to give it back. That doesn't work that way. So you don't call them. You call Lone Star Transfer, the family business with an A-plus rating from the Better Business Bureau. They will legally and permanently get you out of your timeshare. They can't do that if you don't call. They're successful 99% of the time. Just call and you can be free. 844-310-2646. Let Lone Star Transfer set you free. All right? All right. We'll be back.
The best way to understand all sides of an issue is to know all sides of an issue.
Can't get that in the mainstream media, which is why you've got to listen to some Clay and Buck for another point of view.
Buck, why are you going third person?
Because, Clay, I think this ad is running in places that might not exactly align with all of our politics or even know who we are.
It's impossible. But maybe if it's true, I bet if they did listen, they'd end up agreeing with us on at least one issue, even if they secretly won't admit it.
Well, the only way they're going to find out is if they download the Clay Travis and Buck Sexton Show podcast on the iHeartRadio app or wherever they get their pods.
We're easy to find, unlike your wife at Costco.
Clay, you speak the truth, but we're already losing people.
I think I gained one or two just now.
In case you haven't noticed, we like to have a lot of fun as well as talk about what's going on in the world.
Come hang with us today and every day at Clay and Buck. Download the iHeartRadio app, search out those names, Clay Travis, Buck Sexton, and come hang.
In the fall of 1986, Ronald Reagan found himself at the center of a massive scandal that looked like it might bring down his presidency.
Did you make a mistake in sending arms to Tehran, sir?
No.
It became known as the Iran-Contra affair.
And I'm not taking any more questions. In just a second, I'm going to ask Attorney General.
I'm Leon Neyfakh, co-creator of Slow Burn. In my podcast, Fiasco, Iran-Contra, you'll hear all the unbelievable details of a scandal that captivated the nation nearly 40 years ago, but which few of us still remember today.
The things that happened were so bizarre and insane, I can't begin to tell you.
Please do.
To hear the whole story, listen to Fiasco, Iran-Contra on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Justice Jackson?
So my biggest concern is that your view has the First Amendment hamstringing the government in significant ways in the most important time periods. Some might say that the government actually has a duty to take steps to protect the citizens of this country, and you seem to be suggesting that that duty cannot manifest itself in the government encouraging or even pressuring platforms to take down harmful information. So can you help me? Because I'm really worried about that, because you've got the First Amendment operating in an environment of threatening circumstances from the government's perspective, and you're saying that the government can't interact with the source of those problems.
That is interesting. I mean, I'm just a lowly community college guy, certainly not a Supreme Court justice, but I always thought that the First Amendment, that was kind of the whole point of the thing. Let's ask Josh about this. Joining me now, my friend Josh Hammer, host of America on Trial with Josh Hammer. Josh, my constitutional knowledge is a little rusty, I'll be honest with you, my friend. Certainly not an intelligent individual, but I thought that was a little eye-popping to come out of the mouth of a Supreme Court justice.
Jesse, let me first say that it is one of the worst-kept secrets of anyone who has ever gone through law school that the median community college graduate or dropout such as yourself probably actually has better instincts when it comes to constitutional law than probably 80 to 90% of those who graduate from Harvard, Yale, my own alma mater, University of Chicago Law School. So do not sell yourself short. I am seriously not just saying that to butter your ego. That is the current state of legal academia and in many cases, the federal judiciary. Look, to me, this case, and I've been tracking this case for almost 2 years. This has been on my radar for a very long time. Eric Schmidt, the former attorney general in Missouri, he's now the junior senator in Missouri, alongside Josh Hawley. Eric Schmidt, back when he was Missouri Attorney General, he was the one who got this lawsuit going along with his then Louisiana colleague, Jeff Landry. This was back in May of 2022 was when they first filed suit. And then you had a leak where the media started reporting due to partially and perhaps in large part to Eric Schmidt actually leaking a lot of it himself. He made public a lot of the discovery, a lot of the documents and the communication that they got in the midst of this lawsuit. This was August, September 2022, right around Labor Day. And Jesse, it was explosive stuff. I wrote multiple columns on it at the time. The Biden White House, it was the HHS, the DHS, the actual White House itself, the FBI, you name it, the whole alphabet soup, CDC, how could I forget those lunatics? Basically, all of the alphabet soup of the Biden administration was in constant weekly or biweekly communication with all the big tech oligarchs, Google, Meta above all, Facebook and Instagram, and yes, very much so, the pre-Elon Musk Twitter regime. What were they doing? They were telling them to censor speech. They were telling them to algorithmically derank, to depress, to shadow ban, perhaps to outright ban, as the case may be, infamously with the Hunter Biden laptop. And when you look at this from a bread and butter First Amendment perspective here, you know, the First Amendment says that Congress shall make no law infringing upon the freedom of speech. The key word there is infringe. You know, is Congress passing a law here? Is the federal government passing a law to simply say you shall not speak? No, but the word infringe actually, and the concept of legally infringing more generally actually has a lot more wiggle room in it than that. The government has absolutely unequivocally infringed upon many, many individuals' free speech rights over the course of this terrible, terrible experiment in corporate and public sector fusion, which is what we've seen. There was a remarkable opinion from District Court Judge Terry Doty down in Louisiana last July. Fittingly, it was on July 4th. That's fittingly because it was a beautiful pro-First Amendment, pro-free speech, pro-red, white, and blue Americana type of opinion where he basically said that this is one of the most Orwellian attempts for the government to mass censor speech in the entire history of this republic. And his preliminary injunction was modified a little bit, but it was largely upheld at the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Fifth Circuit, which is the conservative-leaning appellate court that many years ago I clerked on myself. So I, based on my reading of the tea leaves, Jesse, this oral argument today did not go as well as folks like me had hoped it would. I'm hoping to be proven wrong when it comes time to release an opinion. I have to shout out to a friend of mine, Ben Aguinagua. He is the new Solicitor General of Louisiana. He got into that post just in January, an absolutely brilliant conservative attorney. He apparently did a great job today in court. The problem is that none of the conservative justices other than Clarence Thomas and Samuel Alito seem to be buying it. That is their problem. That is their fault because Louisiana and Missouri are correct to file suit on these grounds.
Okay. Can you walk me through that, Josh? And I know I'm asking you to put yourself mentally in someone else's shoes, but you have these supposed, you know, conservative or right-wing justices or originalists like Gorsuch and Amy Coney Barrett and others. How are they not all over this too? How is anybody outside of an absolute apparatchik not horrified by the federal government using social media to censor speech they don't like? What are the others doing?
So here is why lawyers tend to make things more complicated than they are. So the relevant legal doctrine that is at issue here is state actor doctrine. And the basic question is, when does a private company's actions or a private company's speech become the government speech or the government's action? So in this case, the point that you're making, the point that I just made, and the point that Louisiana and Missouri made is that these social media companies, Facebook, Twitter, became government actors when the federal government told them what to do. When the federal government said, you really ought to do this, or wink, wink, nudge, nudge, we're going to take away your Section 230 liability, or you really should do this, or wink, wink, nudge, nudge, we're going to probably break you up on good old-fashioned Teddy Roosevelt trust-busting antitrust grounds. And those threats were very real. They were shouting from the White House. The White House Biden administration public health team was openly threatening Facebook, Twitter, all the above. Heck, I remember it was the summer of 2021. I remember when Jen Psaki, the current idiot's predecessor. I remember when she was up there openly hectoring and threatening Mark Zuckerberg and wagging her big finger and saying, oh, Facebook, you better censor these vaccine skeptics because we're trying to get all of America vaccinated. How dare you peddle misinformation? You know, if you're Facebook, you look at that and you're like, wow, the government's telling me what to do, right? But for many, I think, libertarian-leaning jurists in particular, and Neil Gorsuch is a good example of this, he's a much more libertarian-leaning guy than, for example, Sam Alito is, he is reluctant to find state actor doctrine for kind of the old school notion that he wants to maximize private sector speech. It's kind of this idea that the best way to defeat Facebook and Twitter, if you don't like what they're doing, is to build your own Facebook, build your own Twitter, build your own Google, as we've heard the line say many, many times over the past 5 years there. So a lot of more establishment and libertarian-leaning jurists are, I think, very reluctant to find state actor doctrine where it is only debatable. Clarence Thomas and Sam Alito, because they're stalwart conservatives, have no such compunctions. But one final thing, Jesse, on this note, it's worth pointing out that it is black letter First Amendment constitutional law, and it has been black letter constitutional law for 50 or 60 years, that the government cannot immunize or otherwise induce private sector entities to do that which the government cannot do directly itself. The government cannot censor speech itself. What they are doing here is trying to immunize them by saying, oh, you can keep your Section 230 immunity if you do our dirty bidding. You can't do that.
Yeah. All right, let's switch gears here. Adam Schiff is all over the news, as he always is, about to be Senator Adam Schiff, going off about the Trump immunity case. Here he was.
The Supreme Court moved with great speed when it came to ruling that Trump could appear on the ballot. The question is, will it also move with great speed in rejecting this bogus immunity claim? If it doesn't, it's making a deliberate decision, essentially, to push the trial past the election. And I think that would be a terrible decision, both for the interest of justice. It would be a terrible decision in depriving American voters of the information they would learn during the course of that trial. But it would also just further discredit this partisan and reactionary court.
Josh, okay, setting Adam Schiff's moron mouth aside, where do you think we fall in this immunity case?
So let me make one point, though, about the point that Schiff is making, which is the idea that the Supreme Court is going to hand the election to Trump. Jesse, Jack Smith had a long time to file charges, didn't he? And he waited until June of last year to file his case in Mar-a-Lago in Florida, and then even later in the summer of last year to file his case in Washington, D.C. Why did he wait until the year prior to an election year? He could have easily filed those suits if he wanted to in 2021 or 2022. So if there is anyone to blame, if the federal prosecutions do not get up and running before November, which as of this point, I don't think they will, the blame goes to Jack Smith himself. Now, Adam Schiff's not going to admit that because Adam Schiff is a deranged loonbag. But if he was being intellectually honest, if he had a modicum of intellectual honesty left in his body, then he would look squarely at Jack Smith and place the blame with him. As far as the immunity question, which is going to have this huge hearing, big argument, I'm very much excited for myself at the Supreme Court in a little over a month now. I don't think that Trump's lawyers are going to get what they want and get absolute full sweeping immunity. You maybe have two or three votes for that at the most. I actually could see it not getting a single vote. But at the very most, you have three votes for that. Thomas, Alito, and maybe Brett Kavanaugh, who's a very pro-presidential powers kind of jurist. I think what's most likely here, Jesse, you're going to get a mixed result where they basically say that some actions that a president takes in the White House do fall under the, quote, executive power of which Article 2 of the Constitution speaks. And those actions, you are immune for criminal prosecution, but then there are some actions that are not immune. And to give like a very easy example, let's say that you fire a bureaucrat, you fire a subordinate somewhere, a deep state guy deep in the bowels of DHS or whatever. That is a core executive power function to run your administration the way you want. Any possible criminal liability for something that pertains to that action would be, it would be done. You have immunity. But if you want to hire an assassin to, you know, kill your mistress before your wife finds out, maybe then you can be subject to immunity after you leave office. So I think that the opinion is going to look something along those lines. So I'm predicting a mixed result, which, by the way, is actually in reality a pretty good result for Trump, because then they're going to have to kick that down to the lower courts for additional fact finding to see whether or not Jack Smith's alleged conduct in this indictment falls into bucket one of immune conduct or bucket two of not immune conduct. All of this is going to take a lot of time and kick the can down the road. Again, it's looking very unlikely that this trial starts before November.
Oh, that's outstanding. All right. Finally, Georgia. Josh, we got a major update in the Georgia case last week. What's going on? Is this whole thing going away just because Fannie Willis can't keep her pants on?
Well, look, it wasn't quite the ruling that Trump was hoping for. It wasn't quite the ruling that I expected. I actually expected that he would go ahead and disqualify Fannie Willis. So it wasn't exactly what I predicted. Now, what Judge McAfee crafted is a bespoke and somewhat bizarre remedy. He basically accepted a lot of Trump's lawyers' arguments. So Trump's lawyers basically argued that the mere appearance of impropriety or corruption can either require or at a bare minimum strongly militate in favor of disqualification of the district attorney, Fannie Willis. McAfee basically agreed with that. And then he said, oh, but wait, you know, disqualification is also a very strong remedy. Why don't I try to concoct this thing to make everyone happy? And that was his attempt at splitting the baby, so to speak, saying that one of you has to go. It's very weird. I doubt he learned that in his remedies class in law school. He's really just trying to kind of throw breadcrumbs to everyone and make everyone happy. The problem, Jesse, as you know, is that when you try to make everyone happy, you actually make no one happy. Trump's lawyers are going to be able to appeal this, I think, to the Georgia State Court of Appeals. So it's still possible that Fannie Willis actually does get disqualified from this case. But recall that this case was never going to start until August. This was always going to be the last of the cases to go to trial based on the date that they set many months ago. So again, all these further dilatory tactics, all these further delays, I think that the Georgia case is also very unlikely to reach a verdict before November. Slightly more likely than Jack Smith's DC probe at this point, but I still think it's unlikely.
Okay, so he's out of the woods legally before the election.
The only one at this point that I think has called a 40 to 50% chance of reaching a verdict, maybe even slightly higher than that, would be Alvin Bragg's case in New York City. It's basically a coin flip at this point, I think, but it's close. I mean, that is the only one I think that has any real viability of getting across the finish line. Of course, the silver lining there for Trump is that is just by far the most ludicrous of all four of these, you know, fraudulent bookkeeping and further of something. We don't even know. Alvin Bragg never told us what the actual crime is. We think it's campaign election law, but then you have Michael Cohen, Stormy Daniels, hush money. I mean, it's like a Hollywood script. It's like a soap opera, frankly. So, I mean, that's the one where I think Trump might get a guilty verdict. But again, I don't think the American people are going to particularly care, even if it comes back that way.
Josh, thank you, my brother. I appreciate it. All right, let's talk about divorce, national divorce. It's always fun. We'll just do it real quick. Next, before we do that, let's do this, though. Let's make sure we're making preparations, financial preparations. People look around and it's easy to get worried. Maybe that's you. Maybe you get anxious. Maybe you get worried. We wake up every day. We roll over. We grab our phones. We look at the news and everything sucks. We don't need to be worried. We don't need to be stressed. We need to make plans. We need to make preparations. Part of that preparation is making sure you have access to precious metals, gold or silver coins. Well, how do you do that? What do you do? Just call Oxford Gold Group. They are my people. They make it easy. They mail it to your front door. It's all anonymous and all insured. Don't worry, your neighbors aren't going to know you have a new shipment of silver coins. You don't need a bank vault. This is so normal people can have value government can't touch. Call Oxford Gold Group. Also, let them get it in your retirement as part of your retirement, insulating you against that bubble going pop and you lose everything you worked hard for. 833-995-GOLD. Tell them I told you to call Oxford Gold Group. All right? We'll be back.
The best way to understand all sides of an issue is to know all sides of an issue.
Can't get that in the mainstream media, which is why you've got to listen to some Clay and Buck for another point of view.
Buck, why are you going third person?
Because, Clay, I think this ad is running in places that might not exactly align with all of our politics or even know who we are.
It's impossible. But maybe if it's true, I bet if they did listen, they'd end up agreeing with us on at least one issue, even if they secretly won't admit it.
Well, the only way they're going to find out is if they download the Clay Travis and Buck Sexton Show podcast on the iHeartRadio app or wherever they get their pods.
We're easy to find, unlike your wife at Costco.
Clay, you speak the truth, but we're already losing people.
I think I gained one or two just now.
In case you haven't noticed, we like to have a lot of fun as well as talk about what's going on in the world.
Come hang with us today and every day at Clay and Buck. Download the iHeartRadio app, search out those names, Clay Travis, Buck Sexton, and come hang.
In the fall of 1986, Ronald Reagan found himself at the center of a massive scandal that looked like it might bring down his presidency.
Did you make a mistake in sending arms to Tehran, sir?
No.
It became known as the Iran-Contra affair.
And I'm not taking any more questions in just a second. I'm going to ask Attorney General.
I'm Leon Neyfakh, co-creator of Slow Burn. In my podcast, Fiasco, Iran-Contra, you'll hear all the unbelievable details of a scandal that captivated the nation nearly 40 years ago, but which few of us still remember today.
The things that happened were so bizarre and insane, I can't begin to tell you.
Please do.
To hear the whole story, listen to Fiasco, Iran-Contra on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, we're not going to spend a lot of time on this. I'm just going to once again bring up the fact that we are already divorcing as a nation. And I don't celebrate that. Contrary to what people think, I don't celebrate that. I don't think this is great. I don't think it's a good place to be as a country, to watch people separate like this. Is hard. It's ugly. And to be part of that, right? You're part of that. I'm part of that. We are part of the America. The story of your life, part of the story of your life will be you lived in America as it was starting to kind of fracture on us. But look, as much as I dislike it, let's be honest. It's something that should happen. Sometimes it's better if we go our separate ways. Did you see this video? Charlene Oliver is her name. She's a state senator in Tennessee. Who she is doesn't really matter, but you and me, we can't live with people like this.
It is a slap in the face, and you might as well stomp on the grave of Tyre Nichols for bringing this bill. Don't tell me this stuff ain't racist. Don't tell me it's not. It is rooted in racism. This was a Jim Crow bill that Taylor brought and all his Confederates voted for today. So yeah, we gonna fight. Dr. King said the riots are the language of the unheard. You ain't saying nothing yet. If you keep silencing us like this, what do you think our district's gonna do? We have had it up here, gloves off. Like, we're going to fight like hell. You don't expect us to respond?
We can't live together. And Dr. King said, this is racist. My arm is going to start burning crap down. But we can't live like this. And we shouldn't. All right. We have more. We'll do a real quick hit about this Planet Fitness stuff for in a moment. And we have a light in the mood that's outstanding. Before we do any of that, let's do this. Let's talk about your self-defense. Maybe you live in that lady's district in Tennessee, or wherever you live in this country. You need things to protect yourself. There are violent criminals all over the place. And now we're importing more by the million. That doesn't mean we have to stay home. We can't stay home and stay locked in our doors. We can't live our lives this way. We have to carry something on us that will allow us to stop a bad man. That's what BYRNA is all about. BYRNA. This is a non-lethal pistol launcher. I carry lethal and non-lethal on me at all times. Whether you're a gun carrier like me or not, you need BYRNA. BYRNA will stop a bad man. Pepper balls or tear gas balls or kinetic rounds. It'll save your life, the life of your daughter, the life of your dad. Buy one and carry it on you. And by the way, practicing is a blast. 10% off at BYRNA.com/Jesse. BYRNA.com/Jesse. Go check these guys out. We'll be back.
The best way to understand all sides of an issue is to know all sides of an issue.
Can't get that in the mainstream media, which is why you've got to listen to some Clay and Buck for another point of view.
Buck, why are you going third person?
Because, Clay, I think this ad is running in places that might not exactly align with all of our politics or even know who we are.
It's impossible. But maybe if it's true, I bet if they did listen, they'd end up agreeing with us on at least one issue, even if they secretly won't admit it.
Well, the only way they're going to find out is if they download the Clay Travis and Buck Sexton Show podcast on the iHeartRadio app or wherever they get their pods.
We're easy to find, unlike your wife at Costco.
Clay, you speak the truth, but we're already losing people.
I think I gained one or two just now.
In case you haven't noticed, we like to have a lot of fun as well as talk about what's going on in the world.
Come hang with us today and every day at Clay and Buck. Download the iHeartRadio app, search out those names, Clay Travis, Buck Sexton, and come hang.
In the fall of 1986, Ronald Reagan found himself at the center of a massive scandal that looked like it might bring down his presidency.
Did you make a mistake in sending arms to Tehran, sir?
No.
It became known as the Iran-Contra affair.
And I'm not taking any more questions. In just a second, I'm going to ask Attorney General.
I'm Leon Neyfakh, co-creator of Slow Burn. In my podcast, Fiasco, Iran-Contra, you'll hear all the unbelievable details of a scandal that captivated the nation nearly 40 years ago, but which few of us still remember today.
The things that happened were so bizarre and insane, I can't begin to tell you.
Please do.
To hear the whole story, listen to Fiasco, Iran-Contra on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Good day. I just wanted to say I just came out of Planet Fitness, and there is a man shaving in a women's bathroom. I came in Monday. There's a man in the women's locker room shaving. A little girl sitting in the corner. She could have been 12 years old. I don't know how old she was. In a towel, kind of freaked out that there's a man shaving in her locker room. Well, I was offended. I took a picture of him, and I asked him, why are you there? You're a man with a penis. Why are you in the women's locker room? And he justified by saying, I'm queer LGB, and I said, you shouldn't be in the women's locker room. Well, I left. And as I said this morning, I got canceled. Planet Fitness is defending the man in the women's locker room, the man with the penis, rather than the child sitting in the corner with a towel wrapped around her.
Okay. That's disgusting. Joining me now, Isabel Brown, author of The End of the Alphabet. Okay, Isabel, hold on. What? Did Planet Fitness back off after all this? What exactly is the fitness policy for dudes with penises in the women's locker room?
Jesse, I wish I had an answer for that. If I did, we'd probably live in a much simpler time in American culture and politics. But the crazy part is this clip is from a Planet Fitness in Alaska. This wasn't happening in New York City or Los Angeles or Seattle or even Denver, where I grew up. This happened in Anchorage, Alaska. So if you think that your hometown is immune to this stuff, it's not, but we need more courageous people like this woman speaking up and standing up for young girls, which is really what this issue is all about when you get to the crux of it every single day across America.
Okay, so is this going to be another Bud Light situation? Are we just going to forget about this? What's going on with Planet Fitness?
I'm hopeful that this changes so many people's tune. And obviously, it's been very successful when we've spoken up against companies from Bud Light to Target and Amazon and everybody in between. But I think this actually speaks to a much larger symptom happening in American culture, where this has become the norm. No longer is it a radical fringe idea for a grown man to be fully nude in a locker room alongside of underage girls and even taking photos and videos of themselves in the process. Sadly, the more we've normalized or stayed silent about fighting this, the more it's become commonplace in American culture. So I'm incredibly excited this week, for example, to see people like Riley Gaines suing the NCAA that something like this was allowed to happen at the collegiate level. And I think legally is where we need to start taking action to make sure this doesn't happen in the future.
Isabel, how much of the younger generation of women are horrified by this but silent, right? I don't know how to interpret the lack of noise I hear. I realize some women are speaking up like Riley Gaines, and I applaud them, but it seems awfully quiet, and you would think women would be outraged, but I don't see it.
I think you might be looking in the wrong places and or maybe not engaging in the dialogue that's happening on social media, namely on TikTok. You know, TikTok has been under fire the last couple of weeks, particularly for data security concerns. We can debate that all day long in terms of if China is really being taken very seriously by our Congress in terms of protecting American citizens. But I see conversations like this one happening on TikTok every day from women saying, you know, I used to go along with this, but enough is enough. The same has been said all week. I've seen thousands of videos about Dylan Mulvaney's new Days of Girlhood music video and how women everywhere across the political spectrum feel incredibly targeted, made fun of, and wildly offended by what constitutes being a woman today. So the tide is beginning to turn. I think we're just starting to see it manifest on cultural issues more so than in the political arena. But as we know, politics comes downstream from culture. So the pendulum will swing there too.
I'm guessing you don't, you're not a big fan of the TikTok ban through Congress.
I'm not, no, and been very outspoken about that.
Isabel, thank you so much.
Thank you.
All right, lighten the mood. Next.
The best way to understand all sides of an issue is to know all sides of an issue.
Can't get that in the mainstream media, which is why you've got to listen to some Clay and Buck for another point of view.
Buck, why are you going third person?
Because, Clay, I think this ad is running in places that might not exactly align with all of our politics or even know who we are.
It's impossible. But maybe if it's true, I bet if they did listen, they'd end up agreeing with us on at least one issue, even if they secretly won't admit it.
Well, the only way they're going to find out is if they download the Clay Travis and Buck Sexton Show podcast on the iHeartRadio app or wherever they get their pods.
We're easy to find, unlike your wife at Costco.
Clay, you speak the truth, but we're already losing people.
I think I gained one or two just now.
In case you haven't noticed, we like to have a lot of fun as well as talk about what's going on in the world.
Come hang with us today and every day at Clay and Buck. Download the iHeartRadio app, search out those names, Clay Travis, Buck Sexton, and come hang.
In the fall of 1986, Ronald Reagan found himself at the center of a massive scandal that looked like it might bring down his presidency.
Did you make a mistake in sending arms to Tehran, sir?
No.
It became known as the Iran-Contra affair.
And I'm not taking any more questions in just a second. I'm going to ask Attorney General.
I'm Leon Neyfakh, co-creator of Slow Burn. In my podcast, Fiasco, Iran-Contra, you'll hear all the unbelievable details of a scandal that captivated the nation nearly 40 years ago, but which few of us still remember today.
The things that happened were so bizarre and insane, I can't begin to tell you.
Please do.
To hear the whole story, listen to Fiasco, Iran-Contra on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, it is time to lighten the mood. You know, golf is one of those things. I've only ever been to one golf tournament ever, and it was a business thing. I had to go to meet a bunch of guys there, but I'll be honest with you. It seemed really fun. It did. It seemed like everyone was having a good time. Maybe I should be that old guy who goes to more golf tournaments. I don't know, though. After this video, I'm not sure if I want to. I'll see you tomorrow.
Hey, Clay, if there was a summer camp for critical thinking, we'd be the chief counselors.
Those jellyheads in June would be intellectual warriors by August.
Be a lot of fun, too. Some Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure references thrown in.
This podcast, like a daily dose of that, minus the campfires, archery, and pranking the girls.
The bona fide boot camp for critical thinking. You can get in on it for free at the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts. Just search our names, Clay and Buck, listen and subscribe.